Good morning. As we approach the holiday season, how's your work life? We'll take a look at the year in jobs in Hawaii and what may be ahead for local employment in 2017. We'll get some perspectives from the director of the State Department of Labor and Industrial Relations, Linda Chu Takayama, will join us for a live interview. And a dispute over water on the North Shore, rights, privileges, and kuleana. I'm Bill Dorman, and this morning for Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkirk. We turn our studio over to some live music this morning as we continue our holiday music series with some Christmas tunes from veteran rocker Mike Pirana.
It's Wednesday, December 21st. We'll have music, we'll have talk, we'll have more. The conversation is next, following news from NPR.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vanderkirk, and joining me this morning is Bill Dorman, sitting in for Beth Ann. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Chris. Good to be here and coming up to the year end. So much to look at. You guys have some good music coming up.
Yes, indeed. Music. But we're going to start off with a look at Hawaii's labor picture, which tends to be better than the mainland's, right?
It is true. And approaching the end of the year, you know, we thought it would be a good time to take a look at jobs in Hawaii. As you say, unemployment rate in Hawaii does remain well below the national average. In fact, figures out just last week show that seasonally adjusted November jobless rate at 3%. That's down from October, down from 3.2%. National rate, just for comparison, is 4.6%. But as you know, Chris, from years covering these things, the numbers, just part of the story.
Exactly.
And joining us to help fill out the rest of that picture, Linda Chu Takayama, the director of the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. She joins us live on the line this morning. And thanks for taking the time, Linda. And just to start, what should we make of that 3% unemployment rate?
It's actually very good news for job seekers. Because the 3.0% unemployment rate that we are enjoying right now means that there's a lot of competition out there for applicants for jobs. I know just from the state government side, we are actively seeking applicants to come in and take these jobs that we have. Many are going begging, and I'm hearing the same thing from private employers out there in the field. They're having a tough time attracting good hires because there's so many more jobs than there are applicants.
And Linda, is any of that translating into higher wages? That's always the catch with a lot of this.
Well, in order to attract good applicants, employers are going to have to provide some sweeteners in their salary offerings. And so, yes, I would say that was the case. And I think you'll see as you look at the various kinds of occupations that are available many of them are in the higher salary ranges.
Now, when you look at the numbers for this past month, some of the big gains were temporary government jobs related to the election. That was, I guess, about 3,000 temporary government jobs. And at the same time, leisure and hospitality actually lost 1,200 jobs. How do you interpret those?
Well, there are cyclical kinds of things that happen in both industries, if you consider government as one industry and tourism as another. So these things happen in the course of a year where demand for workers increases or decreases as time goes on, and you'll see those kinds of fluctuations. As a general matter, what we are seeing is a huge demand for IT professionals. Technology experts, software. There's just an unending demand for those kinds of jobs. As a consequence, the federal government has actually stepped in by providing two states grants to help us train and make ready a core group of applicants for these kinds of jobs. Hawaii recently received a $3 million grant for IT apprentices. And so we're actively looking to find people who might want to get into the IT industry. We'll train them, put them into sort of apprentice or internship type jobs with companies that can use their expertise down the road. And so we're looking at those kinds of things. Another big area, for instance, is healthcare, particularly in Hawaii, where we've got a very large aging population. And usually the need for additional health care kinds of services is attributable to older folks. And as a consequence, there is a huge shortage in certain kinds of health care workers, certainly doctors. There's a big shortage. One study indicates that we might be as many as 500 physicians short of where we should be.
Now, short of something that takes medical school and all of those years, if you look at those IT jobs, for instance, how can someone prepare for that?
It requires some training, and that's what my department is preparing to do, providing training and internship-type opportunities so that you can get into the industry at the entry point. And build up on that.
And what if someone is perhaps mid-career wanting to shift careers, looking to move out of something that maybe is in decline and move towards something that is in a growth area? What advice would you have in that regard?
I would suggest that they might want to look at, again, the IT area, healthcare area. If they're mid-career but they have some management skills, private companies, are telling me that what is number one on their list is not necessarily the technical skills, but what are called soft skills. The ability to think through problems, the ability to work with people, the ability to manage a group of folks to get a project done. Those things are as important, maybe in some industries more important than having the actual technical ability.
And that's an area where employers are showing some flexibility in terms of what they look at and understanding that experience in a field that on the surface may not be related may in fact reflect some professional experience and background, particularly when it comes to those soft skills.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And in many companies anyway, the sort of traditional ladder up and the sort of traditional kind of office structure is changing. It's a whole new world now, and people operate differently, particularly with the millennials coming online. They look at the world a little differently. The workplace is beginning to look different. So I think industries, companies are beginning to be a lot more flexible in how they look at the sorts of folks that they place in these jobs.
So when you look ahead for 2017, because sometimes labor trends move at different paces, you mentioned healthcare and IT professionals. What else do you see in the year ahead that's noteworthy or that we should take a look at?
I'm looking at a number of areas, primarily related to those two that I mentioned previously. Construction continues to be a high demand occupation right now, so much so that they are importing a lot of skilled construction workers from the mainland in order to be able to complete some of the jobs that got going. You just have to look around town and see all the big cranes out there on the construction jobs, and you know that's an industry that continues to be booming. Lots of apprenticeship-type jobs are available in construction, in things like the Pearl Harbor Shipyard. Still looking for workers, and they do have some very long-term apprentice programs that are available to people. So I would say that there are lots of opportunities that are out there. I would hope that job applicants aren't necessarily narrowing their search to one particular thing, but keep an open mind about the possibilities for other kinds of cross-fertilization among industries.
You know, Linda, you bring up an interesting point on construction, because certainly the buildings going up is a visual here in Honolulu. But there's sort of a boom and bust cycle, perhaps different with the Pearl Harbor Shipyard apprentice program that you mentioned. But in some of these positions, once the buildings are built, construction itself can be a bit cyclical and can shrink back.
That's absolutely certain. We do have the boom and bust type cycle in the construction industry. I don't, at this point in time, see an end to that in the immediate future. That may be true further on down the line. And again, you know, construction workers have a skill that may be adaptable to other kinds of things and need to be open to those kinds of opportunities as well.
You know, when we look back on 2016, one of the big stories, certainly the loss of sugar on Maui, and that has been an ongoing story, of course, for years. But there are job losses associated with that, but even more so, sort of a way in change of thinking about the future for young people. So if you were to talk to, say, a student in junior high or high school on Maui now, what would you tell them about the local job outlook and how to think of it as a young person?
Well, for the younger people, and we have many programs, by the way, that start in the secondary schools to get people to be exposed to the possibilities out there. For instance, we started about a year or two ago a program for secondary, intermediate and high school students, to expose them to the possibility of farming, agriculture as an occupation, because these days agriculture is not just, you know, put the seed in the ground and watch it grow. It's actually very technical. You have to have some expertise on the scientific side in food safety, in pesticides, and those kinds of things. Some of these kids, we've taken them out to the farm, and it was the first time, you know, they've really been in the dirt and opened up their minds to what was available. Hard to tell specifically for each student, so I recommend at this point in time, if they're in the secondary school system, to try different things and find out what's appealing to you. You know, as they always say, if you're doing what's fun for you, it's not really a job. And maybe that's what we're trying to angle for them.
That's a great message and a great thought, and also an interesting point on the changing nature of farming, the changing nature of IT, and the changing nature of management jobs as well here in Hawaii. Linda Tu Takayama is the director of Hawaii's Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. Linda, thanks so much for spending time with us this morning.
My pleasure.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. It's 8:17, and coming up, the secret to longevity in rock and roll. But first, your quiz.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we remember one of the founding fathers of hapa-haole music, an instrumentalist, composer, and arranger, local boy, born in Honolulu in 1892. You know, when he was a kid, his parents took him to band concerts on Sunday afternoons, Kapiolani Park. His lifelong love of music was born. He also sold newspapers on the streets of town, entertaining his customers by whistling popular tunes. His high school education at St. Louis School, where he learned to play drums, piano, and guitar. Didn't play quarterback. After graduation in 1911, he went to work at the Mutual Telephone Company in Honolulu, a job he held onto for years after he became a successful professional musician. His big break came when he went to work for Sonny Kuna, who was probably the first to mix Hawaiian music with ragtime, popular style of the day. He went on to lead the orchestra at the Moana Hotel and compose songs still well-known today. Some of those titles, My Little Grass Shack, King Kamehameha, and Hula Blues. This morning, we are looking for his name. You call 941-3689 or toll-free at 877-941-3689. If you know the answer, first one to get it right gets a prize.
From the biggest library in the world to the most important mission in America.
Making history come alive for people so that they get a sense that the time that they're living in is part of a continuum.
Carla Hayden's the 14th Librarian of Congress, setting a course for 2017 and beyond. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International.
This morning at 9, right after The Conversation.
I'm Norman Berg from Vita Food for Life. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR, Hawaii Public Radio.
Rock and roll has changed its face a few times over the years since Mike Ferrana started playing it back in Chicago. But he and his cohorts and the Piranha Brothers have found ways to weather all its changes in fashion and make a living at it. Mike has learned a few secrets along the way. He's with us to play some music and look back through the years. Good morning, Mike. It's good to have you.
Hey, Chris.
So when did you start playing in rock and roll bands?
My first professional gig was in 1968.
Uh-huh.
For about the same money that a open mic would pay today.
Ironic, isn't it?
The Tan Hall on the south side of Chicago, yeah. On 43rd and Western.
Well, you know, I sometimes think that people who started in music in the 60s and 70s, it's kind of like getting on a boat that later sank, right? I'm not holding you directly responsible for that, Mike.
But. Yeah, who do I talk to about this cost of living thing?
But you know what I mean? The whole thing about when you were coming up, when we were starting out in music in our various ways, the whole idea was you put together a band, you get signed to a record label, you sell a bunch of records, you tour. What happened?
You know, I can't even analyze the paradigm now. I think it's so much more challenging and difficult for young rockers and yeah. young pop musicians and people that just want to be in the main flow of music outreach. It's completely different. We kind of had a horse with blinders attitude, just like you said. Mm-hmm. Practice, write songs, get good, and then find the right business people to represent you to the labels. It's completely changed now, as far as I can see.
What was your path? I mean, you got signed, right?
Yeah, we were signed to MCA Records in 1988. We were managed by Howard Rosen out of Los Angeles, who was a wonderful manager. He's Dan Hill's manager. He was a vice president of Casablanca Records and worked with Kiss and Donna Summer and Parliament. And, mm-hmm. and he was high-powered, high-energy. He's still around. I'm still friends with him. He's actually on the Big Island vacationing right now, and we talked on the phone. And Howard really busted it. It was hard to get record label reps to Chicago to see bands. It was Cheap Trick and nothing for yeah. rock bands.
Right.
And, he managed to get the labels in, and a few passed on us, and MCA signed us. And, and then unceremoniously cut us after we recorded two albums worth of material in 88 and 89. In 90, we got a notice that the albums weren't being released. They returned the masters. We labored hard, and we released what we recorded what we thought were two really good albums.
Yeah.
But they're in the vaults still.
That's not an uncommon experience for bands, irrespective of their quality, from that era, right?
I think so. I think there's a lot of stuff on the shelf that was never marketed and released. Everything was starting to change right around then.
Yeah.
I think as far as, I mean, vinyl was buried instead of having the resurgence it's having now.
Right.
CDs were peaking, the CD format. And MCA bought Motown, and they had a huge country labels. I mean, mm-hmm. MCA was a big country record label, and they bought Motown. And the rock bands around the circuit were referring to MCA as the music cemetery of America, if you got signed as a rock band to them. So it held true for us. Like, we thought it was going to go somewhere. We were real proud of our product, and it didn't. And so we moved on. Tom Pirana, who's still with me with the Pirana Brothers, moved here after we were just too old to be re-signed to a label. We're in our late 30s.
Too old?
Yeah, at 38, getting signed to a major was almost impossible. Now at 25, getting signed to a major is practically impossible from what I can see.
It's really for the young.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that happened, you were saying, like 1988, during the 80s was the rise of MTV and the whole incorporation of visuals.
Yeah.
Suddenly you had to have a whole visual component to your music.
Yeah, that's true. We have a saying in the band today, Pirana Brothers, we used to be pretty. and we crafted. I mean, our members, we really took hard looks at the guys that came in and out of the band. We made sure they were physically appealing. It was just a rigor and a demand that we had to rise to.
Yeah.
And actually, in retrospect, kind of shallow. But
well, there's a reason why
we did what we did.
There's a reason why they call it a show.
Yeah,
right?
I think too as well. And the band was always heavy on humor and sarcasm. We're Southside Chicago guys. How do you survive?
Exactly.
You got to know how to answer the door when the Jehovah's Witness comes.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we ran it like that, and we gave it a run. There are a lot of great Chicago bands. There was Off Broadway. There was the Hounds. Mm-hmm. There was the Thumbs, who became Off Broadway. They were great bands, and just as worthy as in being Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as Cheap Trick would be had they had the opportunities and gone down the right avenues.
Sure. Well, during that period, during the 70s especially, you could play 5-6 nights a week. You find a club that wanted to have a band in residence, and you had a gig. You weren't jumping from one night here to one night there nearly as much as you are now. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think there's the saying I've seen on social media. A musician puts $5,000 worth of gear into a $500 car to drive 50 miles and make $50.
That was the story of my life during that decade.
I think that's a burden that we all gleefully accept for the chance to play.
Yeah.
One of the reasons Tom and I moved here was that we were familiar with it. We had started working over here in 1978, mm-hmm. and knew that there was gainful employment in the visitor service sector,
sure.
the tourism, right, the hotels. And to be quite honest, I mean, we've been at the Hilton Hawaiian Village for 17 years mm-hmm. in one form or another. We've been working with E&J Lounge Associates, which is Comerford and Remington, Irish Rose, O'Toole's, Kelly O'Neill's.
Mm-hmm.
We've been with them for 18 years. So we've got solid employment because, you know, we don't face plant when we walk into the place. We're a little early and we play a little late, so we're
yeah.
a dependable band. But Hawaii is very unique like that. It's not as rigorously strict as Las Vegas. And if they like you, you know you're going to – if you're a famous unknown like we are, and we have to win over new people every night. They're not turning out in droves to see the Pirana Brothers insult the first three tables. they're coming in fresh, and we have them, and they turn over. So we can modify our act moderately. We don't have to put a brand new show together because we're in the same club all the time. And that's what we do.
During these decades that we're talking about, the very nature of the music changed radically. It changed several times, right? You know, hair metal and heavy metal and categories we can't even keep up with.
Yeah. We spared ourselves the spandex era. We never did the big hair, big snare stuff.
I think we could all be grateful.
Yeah, I would look like a giant Coca-Cola bottle if I had spandex on. I wouldn't wear it well. So.
But, you know, a lot of bands dropped off the boat when the fashions changed. And you've seen, you know, half a dozen changes in what even people thought rock and roll was.
Yeah, I think... I think it's a dialectic. The honesty and I mean, you're a roots Americana blues aficionado and musician, so you know that it's like an election cycle.
Yeah,
it comes full circle to the. I mean, right now, is it 95% of the top 20 songs on pop radio are by women vocalists? Very showy, you know, and every once in a while, look at country. I mean, I hear more animosity garnered towards pop country from musicians. It's almost cruel. But the fact is, every once in a while, Chris Stapleton will break through, or Jason Isbell, or Miranda Lambert, who you thought would put out a real glossy product. She put out an outstandingly heartbreaking and beautiful double album.
The stuff getting back to the reasons you love country music.
It's the cycle, right? Yeah. It's the cycle. It goes from glossy to naked.
Yeah.
And it does it in rock, too. I mean, Nirvana and Pearl Jam, you know, stripped Poison all the L.A., you know, shiny bands fell away.
Yeah.
It's a healthy purging, I think.
Yeah.
I have no complaints about it. You know, I think... just to be gainfully employed in the business over 45 years is I'm super happy, you know.
Some of that, Mike, must involve anticipating that next tectonic shift, yeah?
Yeah, I think being true to yourself. I mean, when I'm a circuit musician and I work 6 to 8 gigs a week all the time. I'll probably, you know, when I finally keel over, somebody will think it's part of the show. You know, I'll be playing somewhere they can close a curtain. But I think people that chase the trend are always going to be chasing the trend. We are a classic rock cover band and original band when we play now.
Yeah.
And we come out, one of the things I say, one of the patented things I say to the audience is, if we're working at the Hilton Hawaiian Village at Tapa Bar, I'll say, we're here to play the music you used to listen to before you could afford these rooms. And it's just a congenial thing. It unifies people because all these people work so hard to have their Hawaiian vacation, and they're all silver at the at the hairline, and they laugh because, we never could afford these rooms, but we love Night Moves. We love, you know, Forever Young by Rod Stewart. It just endears them to what's going on. So if you just stay with what you know how to do. When I see guys my age playing Beyonce, I want to slap them.
Well, we may have an opportunity to do that yet, Mike.
we're gonna
bring you back in the second half of the show and hear some of this music we've been talking about. Thanks.
Oh, terrific.
Mike Piranha is the leader and guiding spirit of the Piranha Brothers, a classic rock band that's heard regularly around town. Mike will be back to perform some holiday music live in our studio in the second half of our show.
During Christmas time and throughout the year, you turn to Hawaii Public Radio for news, information, and ideas. We're here for you, and we count on you to be there for us. We gratefully acknowledge Mary Tardona of Honolulu, Dominique Tansley of Kailua, and Alex Rohoff of Kula for their generous station support. Now it's your turn. before the end of the year, make your tax-deductible contribution to Hawaii Public Radio. You can call 955-8821 during business hours or at any time. Click donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Blue Note Hawaii Jazz Club, presenting Kenny G on stage in two sets nightly, December 28th through the 31st. Tickets at BlueNoteHawaii.com.
And if you listened to Morning Edition earlier today, you may have heard Wayne Yoshioka's report on Honolulu Police Chief Louis K. Aloha. The chief's been placed on paid leave for 30 days, surrendering his badge and gun along with his duties. It's the latest development, a story that just keeps moving. And here with an update is Chad Blair of our partners over at Civil Beat. Morning, Chad.
Good morning, Bill.
So where are we now with the chief?
Well, it's surreal, isn't it, Bill? I mean, this thing just keeps getting more and more interesting. He also turned in his ammunition, I should probably say that. And the reason is because he's been named as a target in a federal grand jury investigation. Now, we don't know what the specific allegations are, but even his own attorney is saying, yeah, charges could very well be likely. We're looking at allegations of corruption and abuse of power. And, of course, this all stems from that mailbox incident. And as you know, we had an update on that on Friday. That's when a former HPD officer pled guilty, essentially trying to frame the uncle of Catherine K. Aloha. That's Chief Louis K. Aloha's wife. By the way, Catherine K. Aloha works in the city prosecutor's office. But this officer pled guilty. But we heard that there were five co-conspirators, and now it's been revealed that one of them is Chief K. Aloha.
And Catherine K. Aloha, up to now, there has not been any talk of her stepping down from her position.
No. In fact, Keith Kaneshiro, the city prosecutor, her boss, has strongly defended Catherine K. Aloha, believes that she is innocent. She certainly has been placed on lead. Intriguingly, in the indictment, there's a suggestion that one of the co-conspirators might have been involved in placing the 911 call that led to the mailbox, you know, the cops coming out to explore that situation. Well, in fact, it was Catherine K. Aloha that placed that 911 call. Now, I'm going to stop short of saying that they are the same person. We just don't know that. None of the co-conspirators, other than the chief, have actually been identified. But it certainly raises the question whether more indictments are coming, whether we're going to actually get some names and to see to what extent this it pervades the Honolulu Police Department and possibly the city prosecutor's office.
And in terms of that public information, I guess, and sort of the unveiling of what comes next,
right.
the Hawaii Police Commission meets in January. What are you looking for out of that? What signs or indications can we expect from that?
Well, you know, Max Sword, the new police commission chair, acted pretty quickly. Remember that the chief actually initially placed himself voluntarily on sort of a restricted duty status. That's mm-hmm. what he did on Monday. But then he talked with Max Sword, who's essentially his boss. The police commission is in charge of hiring and firing, and decided, no, I think it's best that the chief step aside. Sword said that the commission would have met sooner, but of course it's the holidays, you know, Christmas and then New Year's. So January 4th is the earliest they can get together. There's a very good possibility that we're going to see, well, he could be fired. That's quite possible. It could be that the chief will decide to resign at that point. It could be that we'll have further developments in the legal situation. But he made clear that they take this very, very seriously. This is coming from the U.S. Attorney's Office. And what he stressed very much is public confidence and trust in the police department is essential.
And Chad, you know, as a longtime political reporter, you know that political pressure is a relative concept. And so I guess on the idea of pressure for resignation, how do you read the temperature in coming days? We've heard some folks call for his resignation, but it still seems to be in that in-between stage. How do you read the tea leaves on that going forward?
Well, you know, I got to rely on Nick Gruby, our police reporter. He's been covering this stuff, and I actually talked to him about this yesterday. I said, Nick, is this all finally coming to an end? And he goes, Chad, this is just the beginning, meaning there's very likely to be, well, there's probably going to be a trial or two or three or five coming up, and that could go on for a long time. But one of the points Nick raises in his article, which is up today, he said, how did we get here? Top officials from Mayor Kirk Caldwell on down have known about this Department of Justice investigation for nearly 2 years now. Mm. None of them acted. Caldwell was asked several times, should Ke Aloha step aside? He dodged it. He said, that's up to the police commission. By the way, Honolulu is the safest city in the country, clearly saying, you know, HPD is doing his job. One official who did step up, a former official, is Peter Carlisle, of course, a former prosecutor, a former mayor, someone who ran against Caldwell this last year and lost. But he called very early on, and for that matter, Charles DeJoux, the other opponent, for Ke Aloha to step down. He says this is a very serious black eye on law enforcement for Honolulu. This has gone on for too long. We just can't let this continue.
And a story that we will keep an eye on here, and I know you will as well. Chad Blair joins us regularly from our partners over at civilbeat.com. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Bill.
Helping people.
It made me feel good.
Taking care of people.
It's just something that you want to do.
I wanted to help.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Wehrman. It's time for The Benevolent Mind, our quest to discover the spark that ignites giving. Leonard Freeman was the producer of The Untouchables, Hang 'Em High, and, of course, Hawaii Five-0. Not very many shows were being filmed here back in those days, but Freeman insisted it had to be shot locally. Jack Lord was the star of the incomparable original version, and his name became synonymous with Hawaii. None of that would have happened without Leonard Freeman. When Leonard and his wife Rose passed, their daughters Robin, Lisa, and Susan established the Leonard and Rose Freeman Fund. They set it up in part so artists could develop their craft without having to worry about where their next meal would come from. The Freeman Fund supports creativity. Its first round of grants went to acquire the art in the Inner Island Terminal at the Honolulu Airport and to the Native Arts and Cultural Foundation to help Hawaiian artists. This is the Freeman's way of saying thanks to Hawaii for years to come. Our program is a production of Hawaii Public Radio and is sponsored by the Hawaii Community Foundation, believing for 100 years that philanthropy is all about you.
Tonight at 5, it's Bite Marks Cafe with Bert Lobb and Ryan Ozawa, and I've got Bert on the line to tell me about this year's gadgets. I love gadgets.
You love gadgets? I love gadgets.
All right.
Except I don't have that, deep pocket to buy all the gadgets.
So that's the problem.
What we've done is we've invited a few of our friends, and hopefully we'll also open the phone lines up for people to call us and tell us what their favorite gadgets are. Of course, you know, this year was pretty, notable for the fact that Apple came out with their iPhone 7, of course Google came out with their Pixel phone, so we'll obviously talk about that. But you know, we'll also focus on some stocking stuffers that people might want to last minute go out there and find if they can find it on the shelves. But there's a bunch of stuff that I think people might be interested in. We'll also talk about one of the drones that we featured called the Mavic, and that's a little collapsible drone that you could stick in your backpack. So there's a bunch of stuff that I think is interesting that came out in 2016.
Well, you know, Bert, one of the things I've seen over the past year is that a lot of things are now designed to be controlled by your iPhone. Everybody's got an iPhone hookup, no matter what kind of gizmo it is.
Well, you know, that's true. And Ryan recently turned me on to something called Automatic, which you can actually plug into your USB connector in your car that gives you all kinds of information about how you drive. And, of course, that's also fed into your iPhone, which you can look and monitor and see what the data recorder is saying about, you know, your driving habits. I mean, this, yeah, it's all about collecting the data and having the smartphone to, you know, sort of provide you with that connection that allows you to see into that world of data.
Well, there seem to be a lot of things designed for the car that give you something to look at other than the road in front of you. I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah, well, we'll emphasize that. Keep your eyes on the road. And
please.
Let the automatic collect the data.
Fair enough, Bert. Thanks a lot.
Okay, see ya.
Bite Marks Cafe tonight at 5.
Meli Kalikimaka and happy holidays. This is Jenny Pressler. You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we reminded you of the man who's credited with expanding the popularity of Hawaiian music, especially the hapa-haole style, around the world. Building on what he had learned from his mentor, Sonny Kona, he became the leader of the Moana Hotel Orchestra and the music contractor for many of the local hotels and country clubs. He lent a close ear to mainland musical styles and was the first to incorporate jazz and blues into traditional Hawaiian songs. He brought the music he loved to the public through recordings, radio broadcasts, performances on cruise ships, and composed a number of songs, including My Little Grass Shack, that became hapa-haole classics. In 1935, he became the first local composer inducted into the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, known as ASCAP. You can still hear echoes of Johnny Noble's influence wherever Hawaiian music is played, and that's the name we were looking for this morning. But we didn't have anyone come up with a winner, probably because Derek Malama was on the air.
We like to bring friends in for holiday music at this time of the year, and we couldn't let our musical guest Mike Pirana get away without busting out his guitar. We thought it'd be high time to add rock and roll to our holiday music mix. So we're back with Mike and Sean Thibodeau to play some tunes. Hello again.
Hey.
So every year your band comes in under pressure to come up with some Christmas music that's still your music, right?
Yeah, we just got done with that Kwanzaa double album, and the next thing you know, they want Christmas stuff, you know.
So. Well, but you're ready for that.
We did. We're waiting for Mariah Carey to reach out and say, love to put this song on my next Christmas album. But
this could be your big break.
It's a cobweb growing from the phone to the wall. This could be it. Yeah, this is more of this is just kind of down the avenue that we stumble most of the time, so.
The song is called?
The Big Red Hat.
The Big Red Hat, okay.
And ably assisted by my beloved associate, Sean, over here. So here we go.
Well, you better look out now. You better watch your back. Santa knows you've been bad and your stuff's not in the sack. There's a fat man gone with a big red hat. And if you ain't been good, you ain't getting crap. That is nothing. Well, things are rough all over. Old Saint Nick had enough. He's from the south side of the North
gift? The chimney was too tight. When he got back, his sled got jacked. He had to walk all night. There's a fat man coming with a big red hat. Yeah, if you ain't been good, you ain't getting crap. That is that, yeah, guitar. Just run about. Rudolph's drinking penguin juice, and the light in his nose went out. The elves are kissing the fairies. The fairies are kissing the gnomes. Mrs. Claus met Bigfoot, and they ran away from home. And there's a fat man coming. He got a big red hat. And if you ain't been good, you can forget about your list, because Santa Claus is pissed. If you ain't been good, if you ain't getting crap, and that is that.
I'm speechless. And that's not a good thing when you're on the radio.
And yet Mariah doesn't call.
Well, who knows? I see all the kinds of phone lines blinking out.
Yeah, that's probably the FCC because of a couple words I threw in.
Probably couldn't get through. What was this about Mrs. Claus running off with Bigfoot?
I couldn't fit Sasquatch in there and say it with any finesse. So it's kind of it's the only other male up at the North Pole that she could get together with.
You've kind of added a whole layer to the Christmas story.
I did. The Christmas monster movie. It'll be a Pixar delight.
Yeah, it's kind of vaguely disturbing, but
You know, I'll take vaguely disturbing as a good review.
Well, I don't say that in any kind of negative way.
Disturbing's good. It's like coffee for the soul.
Exactly. Well, listen, because we want to cram in as much music as possible, we got time for another quick excerpt. You got one for us?
Yeah, can we do a modern-day traditional?
I don't see why not.
All righty, I'm going to clamp up here, which doesn't mean stop talking. It just means I have to tune with a cable one. So, yeah, there that went. All right. Sean told me earlier that this is a Christmas waltz that was written a century or more ago. So I didn't know that, but we know it as the John Lennon Happy Christmas song. And I'm going to try to hit all these notes.
Just hit the ones you like best.
Of those five, there's three that I'm really good at singing. So it is Happy Christmas, War is Over. So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over, new one just begun. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. Very Merry Christmas. Yeah, Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear. So this is Christmas, for weak and for strong, rich and for poor ones. Well, it's so wrong. And so happy Christmas.
from black and from white, for yellow and red ones. Let's all stop the fight. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Hope it's a good one, yeah, without any fear.
Mike Pirana is the leader of the Pirana Brothers, a classic rock band that performs regularly around Hawaii. You can learn more about him and his music on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
And that's looks like that's about it. Nice mix today, Chris.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. It's great to see what we can do with holiday music, because you never know what kind of songs are going to emerge, right?
You know, also interesting, you and Mike talking about working, and Linda Chutakayama talking about working in Hawaii and the shifting job picture here. Some encouraging news, yeah. Really. I mean, challenges certainly remaining, but that was a nice bit of news and really insightful in terms of how she's looking down the line in terms of Hawaii's workforce.
And, you know, we often get accused when we do news of saying, how come it's always so gloomy? But it is sometimes a search for uplifting, positive stories.
An intelligent conversation. That is the show for today. Up tomorrow, Robert Colasano of Mental Health of America Hawaii, Maui Branch, talks to us about mental illness, what it is, what it's not, and what causes it. Also talking with Pacific Forum CSIS Executive Director Brad Glosserman. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is coming to Hawaii to talk with President Obama. We're talking about that.
And we'll hear about a holiday performance of a Beethoven masterpiece. We'd like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments at this number, 808-792-8217. Email is talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. Reach us via Twitter at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR.
And if you have missed any of this show or you want to check out a past one, easy to do. You can find it on the Conversation page. Links to more information about guests and topics. Just look under Talk Shows for the Conversation. That and a lot more at HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Bill Dorman. And this morning for Beth Ann Kosovich, hope she's feeling better and hope you come back tomorrow morning for more of the Conversation.